You are now about to begin
Central nervous.
The great adventure. The journey out of your mind.
The problem of identity for me has always been an unstable relationship to any tradition. Or just any clarity around identity. And so I feel like that's the kind of core improvisation, you know, is just sort of figuring out what, where I fit in things and what I can pick up as an inheritance and what I haven't been able to, or what's been an approximation of a tradition. My general relationship with authenticity, and at a certain, well, I think that the tension, right, the tension with traditions, and when I was younger, wanting to have a stable identity position or a kind of authentic, but then even then, you know, I remember wanting that stuff, and that sometimes overshadows my memory of what I actually need. When I look back at some of my early writing, I realized very, very early on I'd already kind of accepted that the truth of it all was somewhere in the inauthenticity. And that there was that was okay. And but I mean, I look back on it and I sort of remember being motivated by wanting something more stable. But you know, when I look at it again, when I reread myself early on, I realize, well, I kind of knew, I was smart enough to know it wasn't really going to work like that. Improvising blackness here, that's a lot of what all been about for me, and sort of figuring out what is this place, what's my relationship to it, what's my relationship to the tradition, what's my relationship to race, racism, racial law, black solidarity and diaspora, and the movements that come out of that, and all of those things. So it's been really, you know, that's all improvisational, and I think that's why I've gravitated towards forms that are more experimental. Forms that are, you know, probing possibilities and looking around for different ways of doing things, and it's never felt all that comfortable to me to just pick up on something that's already been laid down. Just in so many ways, Brathwaite is just vitally important for me. He's the most important writer. You know, his writing is the biggest influence on my writing, I think, and my thinking. And well, just that. So what I started off saying is, you know, I'm attracted to formal innovation and, you know, experimentation and concept, and, you know, writing that tries to go to the root of what it's doing, and in a lot of ways start all over again every time you're creating something, try to figure out what's possible every time. I'm trying to find non-cliché ways to describe you know, what a lot of people call experimental or avant-garde or whatever, but just work that doesn't just sort of happily receive and then carry on. So I'm attracted to that and interested in that. And partly that's, I think, Vancouver. It's being here and just the set of, you know, mentors that I stumbled upon, you know, like George Bowery and George Stanley and But also, like I said, yeah, this is really, I'm working on this identity problem.
I am a Canadian.
But also, like I said, yeah, this identity problem.
I am a Canadian.
You know, seeing someone like Kamau Brathwaite and reading his work, and then but seeing where he took it, you know, over the years, into this weirder and weirder forms, you know. But I love how it's always in relation to these, you know, this tradition that goes way far back. It doesn't work the way, you know, Euro-Canadian writers and Euro-American writers seem to set themselves up with their identity issues. You know, white writers drive me mad because they can't see around themselves so often, you know, and they don't recognize they're an ethnic group. And one of the issues of their ethnicity is that their people took over the world. So they tend to think that the stuff they're doing is the universal. And so, you know, whatever they're doing, which is their specific business, they proclaim as universal movements, conceptual poetry, they call it, right? And it's really just white folks' concerns when they become poets. And their white folks' concerns are to kill their parents, you know. They're punk rockers at heart, which is, you know, essentially counterculture is their core. And that doesn't work for us, you know. That does not work for us at all. We don't want to kill our parents because our parents barely survive. And they're, you know, they carry the means of our liberation in their, you know, everyday business, you know? And so that conceptual stuff doesn't work for us because it wants to, you know, destroy tradition. Identity problem. Just go say everything you're saying to a native poet in this country and see how it plays, right? You wouldn't dare, you know, say kill your tradition, overthrow it, and all that. Part of what I have to do is situate myself in a history that wants to forget. The year 2000 was kind of the peak of my need for this stuff, like really wanting to, it was just an aching, raw need to understand Black history in the province and in Western Canada, and just a basic understanding, and that really came out of ignorance. I think that's where the raw need comes from, it's just out of a blank space, it's despair, right? You know, that's... I thought this was a multicultural project all through. That was pretty. I made a decision early on that it's not just for Black folks, that this is the history of the city. And there were we got a lot of help from non-Black people, and I thought that was right and how it should be. And so I'm happy that that's. In fact, they should be doing some of the work. I think it's what they're excited about. They should be doing it because it makes it richer. So I'm really glad all those people are excited by it.
How do you manage to find your own voice within the polyphony of so many others?
Mm. So I'm using Armory Schaefer as a kind of foil in it. But, you know, just to say this off the top, it's really funny because I'm a big Armory Schaefer fan, you know? I find him just so compelling. It's interesting to work against him because his ideas are really compelling. But looking at them, I had, you know, have to come down on, you know, on the side of you know, polyphony and electronic reproduction. I was interviewing George Bowring last night for Summer Rights here. Anyway, but he was talking about writing on a typewriter in the days when he wrote on typewriters instead of at night, because there's so many writers in Kitsilano. he would walk down the street, he would come home from the bar and walk down the street in Kitsilano, and you'd hear in the summer when people's windows were open, and you'd just hear typewriters like walking down the street.
Wow.
You'd hear like typewriters like that. And you just think, and Murray Schafer talks about this specifically in The Tuning of the World, about how there are lost sounds. Like, we won't remember that apart from oral history, because it doesn't get recorded anymore.
Mm.
And if you think further back before recording, there are all sorts of sounds that are just lost, except for in written descriptions here and there. But those just seem to be, you know, by chance that they get written down. And every once in a while you stumble across one. That's how it sounded back then, or in that place back then. The DJ is this person who notices sounds, but electronic sounds, like recorded sounds, and the pastiche of all of that, right? And so, but I love how DJs are these just creatures of the crate, you know? They're just kind of, you know, Jason's better at it than I am, but, you know, when Jason and I travel, whenever we do a show, the kind of, you'll know this, right? Whenever we do a show somewhere, what the part of the show that people don't see is that the day before or the day after, we go record store shopping, or, you know, we look in the local thrift store.
Yeah.
And so we do the show, that, you know, and they've flown us in or something, and we do the show. But it's part of the performance, kind of, is that we're just like, wow, we're in Kamloops. We've never been here before. I wonder what the thrift stores will have. And we'll go in there and we'll find, like we did in Kamloops, we found a dub plate. It was unmarked. And we're like, what is this thing?
Yeah.
Who knows what's on this? The dub plate in the Salvation Army in Kamloops.
Yeah.
Got it back to the house, played it, and it was a dub. Well, dub plate. It was an acetate that someone made of a hockey game, of a Kiwi hockey game.
Oh, cool.
The commentary to the hockey game.
Wow.
Someone caught a record a long time ago that ended up in the Salvation Army, and we bought. And it was just the weirdest, you know, it was the city. Like, that was...
And did you guys use that in that?
No, we didn't. It was so scratched up, you could barely hear it. But still, you know, just even the stuff you don't use, that's what the DJ does, right? It is part of the performance, because things that we buy that day might end up in the performance or in the next one. I love that project, and I still want to keep doing it. Part of what I'm stopped by a little bit now is just the shifting technologies. It feels to me like the next step is to do something different off the turntables, maybe. The best music writers are the ones who were almost musicians, or, you know what I mean, tried it, and weren't great, and so they really understand, or really appreciate people who could do it at this great level. Like, I know enough about it to really get it. Like, I was looking at some of the Koalas videos on YouTube, and it's just this ache where you're just like, man, if I could do that. And I've seen him live several times, you know, in Vancouver, the Planetarium at the Commodore. I remember watching him at the Commodore, and had a spot right on the side of the stage. So I was right, I just could watch his hands through the whole thing. And I just, there were certain points when I was looking at it saying, you can't do that. You can't do the thing I'm watching you do. It just can't be done, and yet you're doing it. The problem I have with hip-hop, which I don't understand the origins of it, is the childishness of hip-hop, which has turned me away from it in recent years, where I'm just, I don't understand why it's such a childish culture, you know what I mean? It's just this action movies and nostalgia, and, you know, if you compare hip-hop to jazz, right, and you sort of look at it, it's like black men of this generation compared to black men of the 60s, and you look at those guys. They seem so mature by comparison to their subject matter and how they were on the world stage. And I do sometimes think, I mean, maybe it's just because the jazz guys didn't have to talk much. So, you know, we didn't hear their immaturity necessarily, right?
Yeah.
So maybe they're just the same as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, knowing when not to talk is a kind of maturity in a way, right? And so you look at interviews with Miles Davis, and he's just, you know, shrewd with what he revealed and thoughtful about it. So, I don't know, it's fun. They could talk about form. Yeah, and Mingus, you know.
Because I enjoy all kinds of music. You know, I enjoy Indian music so very much, as much as I do Charlie Parker. I like Beethoven, for instance, string quartets. I like number 9 and 12.
Anyway, yeah, it feels very like I wanna keep doing it, but I don't know where to go with it. But I'll come back around to sound. The sound is so important to me. But I also find technology shifts so quickly now. There's new things so quickly that I don't know. I want to engage with. But that's the other beauty, you know, the beauty of hip-hop is, you know, it's still, like someone like Kid Koala is still final. He's still a final guy, final and turntable guy. It's all still there. And so, talking about tradition, you know, he's working in it with the traditional tools that are old, old tools now. 40-year-old tools, a lot older. The setup is 40-year-old setup. And, but anyway, it does feel like there's something working with the new. Because we are at a different level of sound culture.